Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes I can be smarter than I think I am.
Good morning, family. Good morning. What's going on, Sister Rashi?
Good morning. Good morning. I was here. I was like, I'm not sure whether I should stop talking. I start talking. I didn't hear my cue. But I did hear you over there shuffling like an old man talking, trying to get the 12 clock off of his VCR. You're going to have to come on.
You said trying to get the
You was 5 seconds away from calling your grandson. Come in here and get me on my talk show.
It's like, what's the commercial? Dad, it's a video call. Put the phone into your face. Like this. Go get mom. Just go get mom. It's the same situation. You know, sometimes I move too damn fast, and I forget to do the simple shit to get the big stuff done, but it is what it is. It is what it is. Good morning, family. Good morning. Look, it's a beautiful Saturday. I don't know where you are, but it's supposed to be blazing here on the East Coast. We're talking the mid-90s. That is blazing for this time of the year. It's usually not this warm yet. In about a week or two, yeah, it starts to creep up into the high 80s, maybe low 90s. We're talking mid-90s already. That's a shock to the system, but it's a welcome shock to the system. It wasn't a huge spring, not at all, not a long one. We went from a couple weeks to spring where it rained, and then it just got hot, and it's been pretty much that way ever since. So here we are, and there it was. But we wanted to come to you this week to talk about a couple of things. First off, Rashi got on the ball better than I did, and I will give her credit for that. She got a guest on to talk about religion today. And, you know, I was being greedy. I wanted to really put it all together. And Rashi and Rodney beat me over the head, and they was like, yo, let's just do it in pieces. If we're going to do it and it's not coming together correctly, let's do it in pieces. Well, kudos to you. She went out and got someone from the Christian community to come on today. And Doc is going to come on and speak with us a little bit later. But I didn't want to skip over the thing that was really driving me this week, which was a comment. Well, a couple of comments that some various friends of mine have made a week and a half or so. You know, it still warms my heart that people are so open when talking to me and stuff like that. And a couple of folks came to me to talk about their relationships or lack thereof as far as their sexual relationship is concerned, even though they are in a committed relationship, and or their romantic relationships is concerned. Again, even though they are in a committed relationship, they're just not getting what they need from their partners. And it really blew my mind that these folks were struggling in those areas. Number one, I'm a Virgo and I'm always horny, so that's what that was about. And number two, I'm a Virgo and I'm always thoughtful of other people, so it's natural for me to be a giver. And for them to come to me and be like, yo, you know, I've been with this person for X amount of years and it's just not clicking. It's like, yo, for real? And it wasn't one, it wasn't two. When it got to three and five, I was like, okay, maybe this is something that we need to talk about. And I'm not going to discount or discredit anything that any of our past guests have said before, because when Dr. Brock was on a couple of months ago, she mentioned the same thing, and she had a video, and I brought it up about sexless relationships and stuff, and I was like, "Thought this is bananas to me." You know, I'm still in my 40s now. I don't have many more years left to be in my 40s, but I'm holding on for as long as holding on can hold on, and I'm still in my 40s, and not that I'm in my teens or 20s. And I'm just, you know, trying to get it in all the time, but I still have sexual desires outside of porn, you know, and I would like for those things to be met with and by my partner. So when you're telling me that you're for real committed to, and I'm not talking boyfriend, girlfriend, I'm talking years and years of commitment, be it just in words or piece of paper, some metal and some words and all that type of stuff. And you're telling me that in these situations you're struggling for romance or you're struggling for sex. It's like, wow. That's mind blowing on a whole lot of levels. So yeah, definitely wanted to talk about that. So we got Doc on. Not Doc Brock this time. But we got LK coming on, so she's going to come up with us in a couple of minutes. Then she and I were going back and forth a little bit this morning to make sure that she knew what she needed to be. So give her about 2 to 5 minutes, and we'll get her up and get her in with this conversation. I had a young lady that was going to come on and talk about her relationship. However, she has a family issue going on right now of the fairy variety. Her dog has taken extremely ill. It's really affected her. So she needed to step away, and that's okay. I still wanted LK to come on because I thought it was important to hit this while it was hot. But there's another young lady that I met on Facebook, and she has a book, 10 Things I Learned When My Husband Got a Girlfriend. So I'm looking to bring her in. Her book arrives today, so we'll start reading that, Rashi, get that done. So we're up on where she's coming from. It comes okay. In today.
I
never had a husband who had a girlfriend, but I feel you. And you know, there's a group that I'm in, another group that I'm in on Facebook, and the question was asked, I want to say last week, have you ever intentionally been a side piece? And I was like, oh, hell yeah, shit, I used to like my position on the plate. I ain't even gonna lie. When I was young, please. First off, just being, okay, come on. I need to talk about some stuff. See, I get canceled for free. Whenever she come on, I get canceled for free. Don't tell her that, though, because then she's going to try to charge me and shit. And, you know, she needs to do some pro bono work. So it's the same thing. But, yeah, I get canceled for free whenever she come on. So, oops. Speaking of her, here she is. Hey, Doc. How you doing?
Good morning. I heard all of that, by the way.
You did? My bad. I was going to say that when you was not on air. It's a bullshit. So, Doc.
Good morning. Happy Saturday.
I have a friend. I have a friend with an issue. My friend.
Oh, my God.
He used to love being a side piece because my friend, he didn't have really commitment issues, but his patience with other people was very, very little. So my friend,
are we air quoting friend?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Rashi, shut up. Stop snitching. So my friend, as I was saying, because I know you like to help people, used to be that type of person. Why do you think that was? Why do you think people volunteer to be the side piece? What's been
your
experience?
Well, I think there are a couple of things here. So you have to figure out the attachment style of people. So, you know, there's avoidant attachment style. There are the people who like to not have that commitment and not to have that attachment because it means that they don't have to step up to the plate and put their vulnerability on the table. So a lot of people are very comfortable in being the side piece because that means that they can get somewhat of what they want without having to make a complete emotional commitment to one person.
I think it's just being greedy, personally. It's the ability to receive without sacrifice. You know what get on my nerves is when I have to listen to some man's tired-ass future dream. But I'll do it. I'll do it if I know. If I know he going to go ahead on and do it over the dishes or be cooking while he say it. I'll suffer it. But what you won't do is have me sitting in the side on a car somewhere in some parking lot listening to your tired-ass dreams. If there's something about being able to receive the attention from somebody and they don't have the time or the right to ask it back from you. And when you're able to slide in like that, you know what I'm saying? When you get to slide in like that, you're not just doing that with him or her. That is a pattern of behavior of how you interact with people. What can I get without giving up some of myself? That becomes serial, and I can't stand them people.
That's true.
Well, Rashi,
my
friend is hurt from you saying those words because I'm pretty sure that my friend was not that type of person. But
but if you think about it, though, that's true in some cases, but in some cases it's not, because you have those cases where the side piece really isn't getting anything but sex and maybe a little bit of attention. So you know how a lot of times people will be like, oh, you know, that's the side
that's
piece,
good.
That person downgraded. But they don't have to establish an emotional connection with these people. They can get their sexual needs met. They can, you know, have that person to laugh with. But then they don't have to actually stay and offer any vulnerability or emotional commitment to that person. And sometimes that person may not be doing anything for them financially. It's just, you know, you have a need that needs to be filled in that moment, and that person offers that without pushback and without holding you accountable for your action.
See, this is why my friend. like women with daddy issues.
Just get for another reason,
you know.
Lee. What you are is creating multiple personalities or multiple illusions of bonding or multiple. It's like that you got the same, like more, I'm telling you, more than one person get that. At the same time, they be spread. Yeah, and that right there, being able to create these side realities, I find it's dangerous. And they like, you know, I just like to be with her or her. But no, you actually, with her, you a carpenter. And you go in there and fix her stuff and then have sex with her. With her, you an events planner. And you go in there and place, you know, with her, you know, you just a straight, you know, y'all do the same drug. So y'all just go up in there and lay up and get high to get, you know, it's all these different realities that you get to feed into with these different people. It can't just be sex. You can, you know, it's got to be something more about, oh, over here I'm smart. She's stupid. So when I'm with her, I'm smart. But she's so much, the other girl is so much smarter than me. When I'm over there, I shut up and let her spend the money and make the decisions because ultimately whatever she say is going to net me what I need. Then this one over here, that's my, you know, it's some type, whatever they're exploiting, be it sexual or your intellectual prowess, they doing that. They just got this whole piece of a woman, like an arm over here and a hand over here, and she can read, but she can cook. She got the good coochie. She got the, you know.
Why are you always going to reading? Like, everybody, like nobody can read. Why you always go to reading? My goodness, is it that bad? Is it really that bad when people are that many people are that illiterate? She always has a reading.
All that stuff comes down to is ego and emotional laziness. You don't have to make any, you don't have to make any real commitment, and you still get to get your ego stroked. Who's going to turn that down? Not very many people.
Well, I'm not going to turn it down because I like my ego stroke.
And see, here's the deal. They'll make it seem like they are just, the side piecer says, "Oh, these are my friends. These are just my friends, okay? And they love me, and I'm just trying to spend as much time with my friends as possible." They won't tell you that they have set up these elaborate circumstances. They, you know, I can't explain it quite well, but I think about the guy who has this, his hobby. If his hobby is not in the garage by itself, if his hobby is two-stepping or, you know, going to, if it's outside the house, it's some extra on that, in my opinion. There's some extra other person out there that's providing for that person this new reality where they don't know that they've been fired for doing some drugs on a job, or they don't know about your ugly. All them side pieces don't know your true dirt. You get to leak and do a meter dose drop of your dirt with all these people. The only people who know the truth.
That's not necessarily true anymore. That's not necessarily true because if you look at it, the side piece has evolved. So it doesn't, back in the day when our grandfathers had side pieces, those were whole families. Those were whole families. Like those were secret families. But now you have these side pieces who have completely, what it looks like has completely changed. Like these people don't. They're not trying to be a whole other family. They're literally just trying to have whatever need they need you to fill, and they know that you're looking to step outside of your relationship. They're going to really be the ones using you. Because look at all these side pieces now coming out of the woodworks. They're getting money. They're getting book deals. They're getting all these things by just saying that they've had an encounter with someone. It's more of a hustle now than it is back in
Damn
the day.
You, Corinne,
women with side pieces.
Okay, I want to talk about what it takes to be, what it takes to create that side piece time. Though you got to start a line. You got to be like, I'm going to the store.
Oh, but this is a
what
job.
Store? In Albuquerque. Yeah.
But who's going to hold them accountable? Nobody. And that's part of the reason why people, one aspect of why people step out, because that other person is not going to judge them. I've known side pieces to know more about a person than their actual partner.
Girl, tell.
And that's why you have situations where you have women approaching the wives or the husbands saying, hey, you know, your person's going through all this stuff and you're slacking. And people don't know their partners anymore.
I got a question. Do you think there's more male side pieces or female side pieces? That's a good-ass question.
Honestly, I think right now it's probably about the same. There are a lot of men who find that that's a convenient life for them to live. They want to be the side dude. They don't want to give the commitment.
It's the best position on the plate. Mm-hmm. I promise you.
I don't know, Doc. As soon as Keisha starts getting on my goddamn nerves,
I'm like, if you don't take your ass home to your husband and get away from me, good Lord.
Just in the nature of how we attempt to bond with each other, it would seem that the side piece, the relegation of side piece is a woman's role. Because if we side piece men, like, I guess I'm trying to figure out how to become a side piece man. I've always seen the idea of the side piece as a guy who has a stable family. But you want to cheat, right? Okay, now how do you even make room for a whole nother man?
Can I answer?
What is your answer?
Become a military wife. Good Lord.
Let me tell you something.
I'm walking through the BX parking lot when I was stationed at RA up at Haver. I was gone for a little while, saw this lady that I knew was married, walked up to her, said, hey, Mrs. Bye-bye-bye. She stopped, and she said, who the hell are you talking to? And I said, I'm talking to you. She said, baby, I'm only Mrs. on the 1st and the 15th. I said, Lord, have mercy. If you don't know, that's payday. I said, Lord, have mercy.
The military is a different, that's a whole nother world.
It's a microcosm of society. It's a microcosm of society.
It really is like a club. And that's a completely different lane altogether. You can't even mix it in.
Well, that's the time, though. Okay, I see that then. Long-haul truckers, anytime when your husband is gone on work release for a long period of time, okay, I see it. I can see that.
Marry a roughneck. If you don't know what a roughneck is a person who works the oil fields in Mexico, all down there. Yeah, I can't even think of the name body of water down there. The Gulf of Mexico. Yep, marry a roughneck. Lord have mercy. Same thing, Raj, because they gone 3-4 months at a time, if not a little longer.
True side chick me and I knew were long-haul truckers, because they technically have a family in whatever city they in for more than 2 days. So that reality. But I just saw them as almost serial whores, not so much as they were cheating on their family, but that they had just gave up trying for one. They had just said, I refuse to be alone in any city that I ever find myself in. And so that's a whole different thing. I'm thinking about a woman who's coming home to her husband, right?
Right.
And for whatever reason, maybe he's not intelligent, or maybe he's got some ED issues. I don't know. I can't fathom, based on the nature of how women create a household, I can't fathom a reality where a woman is buying groceries and helping pay the lights and all that whole time, and then she has to tell this adult man, I'm finna go, what do we say then? Back in the day, play bridge? I'm finna go play cards with my homegirl? Like, what the hell do you tell the
man? But that's just it. The culture that we're in now, you have to think about. I'm 41, and so for my generation, it is a little different. It's still, you know, the traditional, for lack of a better term, the traditional roles. But you have these 30-somethings, these late 20s. These young ladies are really running the game. And so it has changed. It has flipped a little to where now you have men of my age who are dating women in their mid to late 30s, and they're in the other side piece. And it's a really odd evolution to see happen because, you know, you have the younger generation of women more educated, making more money, and a lot of times the majority of them are, you know, earning their male counterparts. And so, you know, now a switch happening where it is, whereas the older generation, you know, it's more of a side chick. In the younger generation, it's more of a side dude.
Where they at,
though? This is my thing. How you going to have an ego? How is your ego intact? I'm a whole person, right? Oh, I know I'm a whole. I had a girl say I'm not a snack. I'm a whole meal, right? How do you establish yourself as, okay, I am myself. I am worthy. I'm somebody. And still allow someone to see you. And do something with you Wednesday night from 9 to midnight, Saturday morning from 6 in the morning when you're supposed to be at something else till noon when that's supposed to be over, and you might get to see him Monday night, maybe. Like, how do you figure that out?
No, hold on. I am worthy of
love as a whole person.
Time out. She just said women are in control. So that's her choice. She is now telling him, yo, I need you here on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. You got from 10 to 12:01. That's it. You don't get nothing else.
What's this to say?
And then
drop down them draws.
There you go. And then I might need to see you on Friday if I need a tune-up, depending on how hectic my week was. Ain't nothing wrong with that. I enjoy women like that.
But no, but see,
I mean,
the problem with that is that you don't want to be in a relationship or a situationship or whatever you want to call it. People have to stop getting into relationships if they're truly not ready for them. That's really honestly the bottom line, is that, you know, you have these different attachment styles. You have people who are avoidant attachment styles, and as soon as someone, you know, shows a level of interest, they're, you know, off in the wind, but they're not necessarily letting that person go either. It's selfishness. And so people, you know, I say this all the time. If you don't want to be committed, do not get into a relationship. It holds no value for you to get into a relationship, a monogamous relationship with someone, just to cheat. For all of that, go find somebody who is poly. Find someone who wants to have an open relationship or is interested in that lifestyle. It doesn't make sense to bring a monogamous person into a situation where you still want to step out and do your own thing. It's just not fair.
And that's what sex workers are for. That is why we have a multi-billion-dollar sex worker industry in this country. You want somebody to tickle your pickle, go pay the woman, she had that money she asked you for. You want somebody to touch and lick, then pay them. Okay? Yes. So that's the point. You're trying to turn women into whores. Why don't you just go pay a hoe?
Hold on. You keep coming at this like this is gender neutral or gender specific. There are men that are side pieces too.
And there are men for hire. Quit taking these good men who want to be somebody's daddy, help you out turn them into a midnight rambler. Go get
Amen
you a, there's some midnight ramblers out. There's some pipe slingers out there ready for you.
It really is. And you know, it's crazy because, so, you know, I'm back out in the dating world and I meet a lot of guys who are just very messed up. Dating is very weird for me. I had to take a break. I met some weirdos. It was crazy.
I thought you would have been locked down by now.
When I told you the last two episodes ago that I ran into a man talking about vampires, you started laughing. I told you they was out there. You started laughing. Never mind.
Okay, so is the philosophy the same? The crazy men got the best sex, like the crazy women got the best sex?
No.
Is it
no,
the same?
No.
God should have brushed y'all with some Keisha, because Keisha got the...
Hey, Doc, you're going to have a hard time. We have had generation after generation erode away at what we feel like needs to happen in order for us to feel safe in a bond. What y'all call it, equally yoked? We can't even get past the shell. We have no idea what the yolk is talking about. It's a brown egg, white egg situation. So whenever I tell them, what's my motto, Lee? I'm not next.
We can't all be next. I'm trying to get Rashi to get, you know, a little something.
But you know, it's funny. So funny story. Before I know I get kicked off of here.
Because Doc is on, so you gotta go.
So I find myself in situations where I end up being the therapist for whoever I'm trying to date, which is terrible. Last guy I went on a date with, I actually helped him get back together with his ex. If that's not problematic, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, healing. That's a whole show.
Hey, thank y'all for coming up. God bless. Good night. Yeah, we can drop the mic right on that. Like, I took this boy. I looked at his sorry ass and said, look, you need to go back to her because you don't need to run nobody else's life but her. Lord have mercy. Doc, look, we got to pick this up again because we got to get the other people involved. We got to get a really robust discussion around this. But we do have Doc on the line, so I want to allow you to bow out and let him jump in. You take care, okay, sis?
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
We love you, man.
Love you, too.
Hold on, Doc said she ran away already.
I don't know who this lady is, but she has inspired me to write book two. I wrote a book entitled Pillow Talk, Relationship Affair, and so on, back in 2018. But from what I'm hearing, it's time for an update.
Man, let me tell you something. The way these folks out here are struggling to relate nowadays, brother, you could be on volume 7 right about now. I am a man.
And a book may not cure what's going on out there. I'm not sure that people are reading to fix stuff. You know, we just wade through stuff. We don't try to fix stuff. We just wade through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he came on before I got to introduce him. Y'all getting nuggets of wisdom before I can tell y'all who you're getting them from. Doc, Mrs. Doc, Lady Doc, I want to thank you for coming on. As always, you always bring the information we need. Even if it's not what we like, it's still what we need. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before I keep going, let me introduce you all to a Kansas City force. I met this brother when I was a teenage girl. And he was willing to come to my school and teach the black boys in our school who were statistically just not making it. The test scores and all grades and all, they weren't doing so well. And so my students at my school were like, well, come on, let's get an after school class where a black man will come talk to these black boys and see what we can do. We got it all together, and the district told us no, that it was discriminatory. And so, but this brother was on. He was on to make difference in a real tangible way. And from then on, I was just hooked. I was able to listen and find him in different venues and events. And I've just never heard him say a lie. This is a thing that I do personally. I listen for truth. I listened for the truth in other people's voices, and I pretty much got a meter. That was true. That wasn't true. That might have been true to that person, but it's not applicable to the world. There's three categories. I have almost always been able to put all the words coming out of this brother's mouth into the true for the world category, true for the world. And so I'm impressed that I was able to call him, okay, text him, call him, and get him here to our space. Please allow me to introduce to the radio world, not for the first time, I'm sure, Reverend Dr. Millis Bass. Doc Bass.
Bless you, sis, and thank you for the invitation to come on. Let me say, I for sure that you and I worked on Breaking Bill when the brothers and sisters were coming back from the gang, right?
We did, but that was street organization.
They preferred to be called street organization.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did,
we were, huh?
Yes, sir.
We were helping
them
make the transition back into the community.
Time meeting you, brother. My first time meeting you was as a teenage girl, and being introduced to you as by I do believe Dorothy Shepherd, as a person who would come in and help our school with the what they call school to bail pipeline we had going on at the Academy of the Fine and Performing Arts. So that was how I kind of got introduced to you. And when I saw you come in, again, like I said, every time you come in, you bring truth with you, the truth of what the school was doing to the boys, the truth of what the gang activity was doing to our communities, you know, the truth about what the church's actual responsibility is to our community, especially after they received the monies from our community. You understand? So I began to watch and listen to you as a person of a pillar. You're a human pillar in my social community, because you speak the truth even when it's not being accepted by the industries that you're trying to speak the truth in.
Yeah. Well, we're not defined by them. You know, first of all, and so we have no accountability then to explain ourselves. Or now that's my philosophy. So I'm not going to bend myself out of shape and make myself into some kind of elastic personality that accommodates somebody else's sensitivities. If you're afraid of me, I'm sorry. That's not my responsibility. And so I'm not going to make all these adjustments to my character, my person, my psyche, so that they can feel comfortable, you know. Otherwise, you'll never be you, you know.
Ever you. Are you a Kansas City native, Doc Bass? Were you born and raised?
Yeah. I started down there in the projects, 13th and Holland.
T.B. Watkins.
Yes. Went to W.W. Yates. 40 tore down, of course.
So did you ever live anywhere else for a significant amount of time, or have you just kind of been here?
I lived in Colorado, New Jersey, Virginia. I think the longest period of time was in Virginia, out there, one of the foundations of the nation, you know.
Yes, we all had to come through Virginia. Yeah, we all come through. So you've seen this city change. You've seen, you know, when the Vine was really popping down to where now it's a cardboard figure. You saw the city erupt in fire for the death of Martin Luther King.
I was in Europe at the time. You know, I was one of those Vietnam era of veterans. You know, during the draft, right? So they were snatching the brothers up and shipping them over to Vietnam in higher percentages than anybody else was. So I was
what
in
branch
that,
of the military did you serve in, sir?
Sir?
What branch of the military did you serve in?
I was in the Navy. I was the first. I was when the and this is in the 60s when the brothers Muhammad Ali told me, he said, hey. Tell them that the Vietnamese ain't never called you no nigga. You want a school. Tell them you want a school. I said, I want a school. And they sent me to what was being called at that time data processing school. It's called, what is it, IT and all that now, because it's data processing.
Yeah.
So I was the only brother, one of the first brothers in that whole category.
Wow.
But they did quiz me. They said, what do y'all want? While everything was on fire, they would ask me out there in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, they said, what do they want? I said, I think we want y'all to stop killing us and killing our leaders. I think that's what we want, if you're asking me. You know.
And the brilliant answer. Brilliant answer. What do they want? What the hell? We want to live.
Well, that hasn't changed yet. You know, what do we want? We like a day without deaths.
Yeah.
You know, percentages
wow.
are high.
Well,
yeah.
you're
we're
the only,
on
you
the
are the spokesperson. If you're the only somewhere, you do have this unspoken power to say, listen, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be the, but I am a. You know, whatever the group is. And, if you asking, I'm going to tell you. And it is somewhat of our responsibility to be able somewhat to for each other when we are the only. If you're the only person in a hangman's, group, be able to say, hey, or is this just? If you're the only, you know, black person and they about to. Mm-hmm. If you're the only, you should be able to say, okay, yeah, this is what I think. Well, and you said it, you phrased it absolutely right, Doc. I do believe and I think this would help us. If nothing else, this would help. They can't argue with that. Stop killing us.
Well, no, the thing is, and I keep adjusting my paradigm as the time changes and I get older, and I'm losing my patience for explaining to other folk, you know, why they're doing so wrong. Not that they care. I'm not so sure that there is this deep conviction in America and the concern about why the political establishments and a lot of other kinds of movements that are going are so painful to so many people. They know. I'm cutting off being naive to think a certain way about, you know, certain expectations. I need my energy for action. You know.
How long were you in the Navy, Doc?
I think long enough to make some officers mad. They almost put me out. I wouldn't salute
and to get the GI Bill, right?
I wouldn't salute them, and they got upset about that. You know, I said, there's nothing that says I have to be courteous to you. You know. But I was a little bitter and hard. And those were those times. And everybody was rebelling in their own way. I was looking at the brothers that were over in Vietnam, and they did a documentary on them. And the questions they asked, well, what was the problem? The most that they could come up with was they couldn't play soul music at the PX and wear their afros. I said, well, why didn't y'all tell them that you all were dying at higher percentages than anybody else? And they were sending you to the hot zones on a regularity and you couldn't get promoted. Why didn't you tell them that instead of saying, well, we can't wear our afros and dashikis? And that's cool. That's cultural. But the crux of the problem is that we were dying at a higher rate than anybody else in that war.
Doc, I want to ask
you
came back from Vietnam, and what did you do with yourself? When did you make the conversion from a fighting man for your country to, you know, the suing the cloth?
I didn't do a whole lot of fighting for him. I tried to rob him. You know, I got into it with another partner of mine out of Newark. You know, things are still hot. And we schemed we were going to rob the payroll. And so we went on a robbing spree from Colorado to New York and back. And when we got back to Colorado, that's when we got busted. I went to two state penitentiaries, one in Colorado and one in New Jersey, for assaulting the police and robbery and stuff like that. That's another day.
How many years did you get?
5 to 15 in Colorado. They ran them concurrent with 4 to 6 in New Jersey. So I finished part of it in Colorado and then went to New Jersey to finish up.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. Now, I want to say this. This is a part of Doc Bass that I actually did not know. So I'm sitting over here, and I'm so glad this isn't a video call, because, Doc, you would have had to come and sew my mouth back closed. Wow.
Well,
I mean, I knew you were street savvy, but I didn't know you was actually street versed, you know?
What's the point of going around, you know, bragging on that stuff? You know, I had work to do. I got a chance to do some, you know, it was very rare. It was exceptionally rare. Before I met you, Rashi, I worked out. I got the whole neighborhood of Blue Hills. I cut my teeth on all the youth out there. I had Prospect, Pipasail, from 63rd to 47th Street. That was my zone. And I organized the kids out there, set up a youth center. I built a youth center in the basement of a church out there, St. George's. That's where I met all the little thugs and gangsters and what have you out there on that end of town. I met the other ones when I came down to the 12th Street area, you know. And we had what the press called the gang summit in the 90s, wasn't it? Two of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Mr. Farrakhan was instrumental in doing those in the early 90s.
Yep, I remember. I almost met Farrakhan because I wrote an article about him in the Call paper. I think it was 1992, something like that. And the title of the article was Farrakhan, Friend or Foe? Because we were going through some changes.
You can rewrite today.
You know what though? I've actually had the pleasure of meeting the brother in person, and actually spending some time with him. It's a very powerful experience. Very powerful.
Yeah, I did. He was looking for me. He wanted to know. He read some nice show in the article. Well, who was Doc Bass? Where is he? Yeah, I think Carl Boyd told him.
All right. So did something happen, brother Bass? What got you into the ministry? Please tell me it wasn't a tragic, you know, something super tragic that you just had an existential crisis
you know,
about
I think we are all evolving, you know, we're constantly looking for, you know, I wanted to be a gangster. I mean, like a lot of Kansas City brothers, you know, youngsters, you know, we watched, when we were growing up, we watched them. I was raised in church, but I didn't see the male role models didn't fit my, you know, my paradigm, my psyche. We didn't have, in my view at that time, I didn't see the kind of machismo and the masculinity, the go-getterness and all of that stuff in church. I saw it in the streets. And I don't think I was the only little black boy who was developing these kinds of images for themselves. And so that was in me. And it just kind of grew up as I went along to get along and so on. But we went full-fledged in the 70s. Yeah, 70s, when things were starting to get hot on the other end of the country with the crack epidemic and so on. But anyway, no, it was not a major crisis. It was a logical struggle to find truth. What is truth? When I was in the penitentiary, I was what they call Chrislamic, right? I was part Christian and part Muslim. All of this you're searching, you know, we're trying to find what is real, who is God, and what's the plan for my life? Where do I fit in this whole scheme? What's my role? You know what I'm saying? What do I do as an individual? What do I do as a black man?
Mm. You know,
how do you survive? What is it? Where is the codification of where are the rules and regulations of being a black man in America when it seems like things are set up to destroy him, to emaciate him, to emasculate him. Where is the book on being a black man in America? So, what was that? I was, after I got out, I got out on the East Coast. No people, no nothing, no connections. And so I had some other traumatic. I was in a fire 6 months after I got out. And everything was destroyed, and I barely escaped. I had to jump from the third floor in 17 degrees temperatures in pajama bottom, no shoes, into the snow, about a foot of snow, February. Never will forget it. And they put me in Howard Johnson's hotel for 5 days, gave me $100 to start all over again. And I bought a whole hundred dollars. That was a lot of money in 76.
Oh yeah,
77.
Yeah.
I got more.
A whole lot
that you can get today with it. But yes, I started writing. I bought a little tablet, and I just started writing. I used to write the magazine for the prison. That magazine went into 27 foreign countries and every prison in the United States. My mentor was one of Stokely Carmichael's partners from SNCC, right? He's about 20 years old, and we ran the prison magazine. And I was, that's, I guess you would say, that's where I was really radicalized.
Prison magazine, and that was circulated within the prison and out, or was that mostly just,
it went to 27 foreign countries and every prison in this country.
That's big, brother.
We were one of the best. We won prizes for our prison magazine. You know, voices from guys. I was on the inmate count, the only black man on the inmates council in Colorado. Very, very racist penitentiary.
Racist state. Absolutely. And still is. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get out of the fire. I lived through a fire as well. Very traumatic experience. I'll never forget it. You get out, you get through the fire. Literally baptized through fire, pretty much, huh?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, I think, you know, it'll put it on your mind. So it'll put survival back on your mind. What was this about? You know, why was I could have died up in that little corner of the attic in New Brunswick, New Jersey. No one would have ever known about me. It was none of that. And so,
yeah, like you
so
said,
why? You know,
you had no people, you had no connections. So you're right. You know, I mean, it would have taken back then. It would have taken a good little minute for them to get the information back to your people, you know. You pull yourself through that. You write your first book. What's your first book about, Doc?
Well, I didn't start writing until after I became a pastor. And this you're talking about years now. Years rolled by, you know, after I gave my life to the Lord and got in the system with quotes around it now. When I say the system, you know, the organized church system and so on. My first book was a devotional, a 30-day devotional.
You know that's a gang.
Called, pardon me?
You know that's a gang.
Game?
A gang.
I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're saying.
You said you got in the system, the organized church system. I said you know that's a gang.
Well, I wouldn't call it a gang. I would call it what it is, a system. You systemize,
it's a club.
Anything, you know.
Right.
I think pretty much in this culture, you might say that, but it wasn't like
yes,
that.
Sir.
I think whatever is wrong with the church, we did it. You know, whatever criticism, whatever problems we have with it, those are not problems that Jesus created as the head of the church.
Yes,
those are problems we created. You know, I was looking at the Discovery Doctrine. The Discovery Doctrine, what was that, 1493? The guys are saying, look, all of you explorers, right, when you go out and you discover territories that are not Christianized, claim it. If you got to kill them, if you got to make slaves out of them, if you got to take all the resources, you are hereby authorized to do so. And this is way before, this is almost 200 years before the 1619 date that, what is it, Nicole Jones is using for her project. So the problems that we have, in my view, that we struggle with the church, and the reason why so many people and so many youth are turned off is stuff that we did. When I say we, I mean people did. You know, organizers and bosses and leaders and bishops and popes and what have you. We ruined, in a lot of cases, what could have been a very functional a system to help change the world. And yes, it, because of what's in us, this greed and this larceny and stuff, we spoiled it. You know, it didn't start out like that. So, yeah, I guess you could say it's some level, yeah, gang, whatever.
I want to build off where you were just going, because I went in the military. I'm an Air Force veteran. Brother Rodney is on with us as well. He's an Air Force veteran. We're on the opposite end of the spectrum. Rodney is down home, southern, in the church, 10 days a week. Nah, not 10 days a week. I'm messing with you. I, on the other hand, went in the Air Force. The first question they asked about religion is, what's your religious preference? I said, absolutely none. And that is what's on my dog tag. No religious preference. Actually, it says no religious preference. And I'm looking at folks, not only in my age group, because I'm in my mid to late 40s, but those coming after me, and more folks are turning away from organized religion in general. I understand and I appreciate you saying it's what people did, because it is. You know, when in my mindset, you know, in my youth, I didn't grow up that way, obviously, right? I was raised by my grandparents. My grandparents are very Roman Catholic. They did not play. We were at Mass and at church. They did not play. However, again, coming up as an adult, I made my own choices. I made my own decisions. And I chose to step away from everything, to look at everything from my preview. So going back to your past life, sir, when you were a Chris Lamek, I too walked that thin line for a very long time. Actually, when Rodney and I met, we met in Korea, I really delved deep at that point into Islam, making Salat, going to Juma, everything. I mean, I was really, really deep on following that path. But the further I got down it, the more I didn't like it. And, well, I didn't like it. It's not about liking it. The more the history of the world continued to reveal to me. And that's my biggest issue. I'm a historian. So I look at everything from a historical context. And if it doesn't add up, it doesn't work for me. Hence the reason that I continue to believe in God, trust in God, pray to God, but I put no denominational context whatsoever on God, but without a doubt. You know, however,
well, that's the trend.
I do recognize it. Go ahead, sir.
Well, that is the trend. I mean, you're not unique. I'll say it that way.
Right. Not claiming to be. My question is, how do we coexist? Because especially in our community, the Black community, you know, we are hard-nosed. It's either you are or you ain't. And if you are, it's a whole lot of love for you. And if you ain't, or if you in the middle, it's, you know, we don't know what's wrong with you. We just need to pray for you. And how do we coexist?
I don't know.
I
don't know if that's totally the case, because, you know, and Rashid just got a copy of my book, Slave Ship Pulpit. And what I saw when I was researching that book was that there was a time when you were either or. You know, whether you are African with all the gods, you know, that we brought from Africa, or whether you were a slave on somebody's plantation being programmed, you know, by the plantation preaching or plantation religion, what have you. But since then, you know, we're a range. We're not monolithic. We're not even either or anymore. I discovered that even during the Harlem Renaissance, that was probably the entryway into some of the first atheists that we had, you know, Zora Neale Hurston and Richard Wright and, I forget the brother that was real strong with, he was from St. Croix. And there was a movement during that era, what's it called, the New Thought movement. And so we began to start stretching out. So you got a range of things, everything from the Hebrew Israelites to the Nation of Islam, you know, this and that and the third and the fourth. So, what is happening now, you know, people, there was a mantra that you hear people say, well, I'm not religious. I'm spiritual. Well, okay, all right. So you're spiritual. You're still defined. You're saying that you embrace a or the spirit. And so we're still kind of stretching out to all over the place. And I think bottom line is what people are trying to do is find something to explain to them what the French call the raison d'etre. What's my reason for existing? And since I'm here, how do I get along with these other Negroes? Some of whom are trying to take my lunch, you know, or my woman, or my car, or whatever. How do I find some kind of practice, whether you call it religious or spiritual, whatever? How do I conduct myself, and how do I find a group of people where we can conduct ourselves in a manner that our lives are prolonged, that we are kind of cohesive and get along and all those kind of things? I think basically that unless you're just a foul and evil person, I think people really want to have some peace. They don't want you taking their lunch, their wife, or their property. Whatever. They really don't want that, you know. But something is operating in the human family. Whether you believe in church, whether you go to church, whether the mosque or whatever, we have to admit, look at your political atmosphere now. Look at the clowns that are running the country. You know, how do you explain that in a spiritual context? How do you, you know, what does
that's
the big
money.
Lie? Hello?
That spirituality is called money, because that's all them care about. They care about power
and
money.
But it's something that defiles the human family. We'll put it that way. It just defiles us. You got folks who are ready. You know, I was looking at a report the other day on the Secret Service. Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, in the history of America, no president, nobody has ever received more threats on their lives than them. There's something evil. You want to call it evil, whatever you want to call it. There's something foul in the spirit of a people. So you want... If you want a religion to correct that, you want something that is more powerful than the stuff that's operating in the people that just want to kill somebody just because they're black.
Well, you know, when you look at the former president and his ex-wife, and you think about Moscow Mitch and the agenda of the Republican Party immediately after his election, their immediate call was the defeat of anything that he put forward. That, sir, is pure evil. That, sir, is a lack of leadership from those whom claim to be in a seat of authority and being leaders. Rodney, go ahead and jump in, brother. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. This is such an interesting conversation. Very seldom do we get this topic, and especially with this particular bent to it. So, Doc, I appreciate you being here and sharing so candidly. You mentioned a couple of things, and I want to try to sum up a question for you. Lee talked about folks sort of not entering the church nowadays compared to in the past, and to a certain extent, folks leaving the church because maybe they have a bunch of options. But what I wanted to get to was, what about the fallacy of the church and how much that impacts people once they get into it and see that it's not what it says that it is? So the church in America was given to, more or less, forced, but given to black people.
Thank you.
Under false pretenses. And under those false pretenses is they even had the slave Bible that had certain portions of it redacted so that the slaves, you know, the slaves of the 14 to 1800s wouldn't do like the Hebrews and leave them their masters, wouldn't know that that's what slaves actually did, and just leave in the parts that said you should be a good slave. The fact that you had a white Jesus when even in the Bible, it doesn't describe a white Jesus. So there's a lot of fallacy in the church that black people were given. And possibly as black people have gotten more awareness, they see the hypocrisy of the church. And therefore, maybe that helps them separate themselves from the church. So from your perspective as a pastor, how do you see that?
Well, first of all, I've tried keep saying that I think I'm evolving. I continue to evolve. A lot of things I don't embrace because, you know, I'm an historian as well. And so even when we say the church, we usually couch it in terms as though America was the center of the universe, that that's the only church that's ever been. Except for the European church. But you got to remember that you didn't have black folks if Egyptians were black, were they?
That's right.
All right. So you had black churches before there was America. You see what I'm saying? So when we look at the context, the cultural context and the historical context, the racial makeup of America, it ends up being the new kid on the block. It is ruinous. It has been ruinous. Its reputation has been ruinous. It has been foul. If there's any preservation at all of the purity of the gospel, it has been because there has been a deliberate and a fight for it. Okay? Not because there is an authentic, I can't even think of a period. You know, look at the Great Awakening and the 1700s, 1600s, that whole period was just awash with foulness, with defilement and corrupt translations and corrupt interpretation. That does not, if you were to go into the Coptic Christians in Egypt, you would not have that same kind of corruption. You see what I'm saying? In Ethiopia, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have that same kind of corruption in Ethiopia, and that's much, much earlier than before there was ever an America whatsoever. So we end up trying to defend. I've given up on trying to defend America for anything. There is no defense. It's just one of those nations that has corrupted itself, and everything it touches has been corrupted. It's political process. We almost worship what we call the democratic process, or democracy rather, and but everybody that has touched it has defiled it. You see, so I don't try to defend the American church in the context of the American experience. It is indefensible. It's indefensible, and it continues to this day. You know, the Southern Baptist Church is the biggest branch of the so-called Christian church in America. The Assemblies of God, what people talk about, the evangelicals, do you know where they came from? They came from right out of the black church. They came out of the Church of God in Christ. After Bishop Mason, a former Baptist who went to the Azusa Street Revival in 1906, and around that era, started the Church of God in Christ. Guess what? The white folks were coming to his church. He ordained their first 300 pastors. As soon as they got on their feet in 1914, they went to Arkansas, and started the Assemblies of God. And they never really acknowledged their roots in the black church. So you see what I'm saying? So everywhere you turn, there is some kind of twist or some kind of entanglement that is really indefensible. You'll run yourself raggedy and crazy trying to defend the church in the North American context. That's why we call it westernized Christianity. Mm. It's been westernized.
Come on with it. I mean, and there's nothing. There is not religion, education, medicine. There is no facet of human understanding that can't be, you know, tainted and bastardized by a greedy agenda. And it's not. And I don't use the words evil because I also don't have a strong religious foundation to work with. Definitely use the words greedy. I like to use the words inconsiderate. And just straight up disrespectful. Like humanness should be above and beyond to me religiosity. There is something scientific to existence. And that basic thing, if we wanted to continue, you have to nurture existence, in my opinion. There was not a heavy nurturing.
No disrespect. What do we have to guide or to guard, for that matter? What do we really have to either mandate or compel the human family to conduct itself in the manner that you're describing? You know, that's what religion has tried to do, except that the ingredients, the stuff that is in us as human beings, contaminates all those efforts. Everything that we try to do to organize a religious direction, a religious thrust for modifying human behavior has always been corrupted by the corruptors. There is something in us, whether you want to call it evil or bad or wicked or whatever, there is all the evidence points to there's something in us that has to be managed or it will consume us. That's why your democracy is at risk.
In the scientific realm, we deal with it as information. We think about it as people who are uninformed create acts that are not conducive to their living. But it's they doing it not because they're evil or bad, but because they are uninformed. Uninformed people make bad decisions, and I guess one of the things I always worried about is if you're going to accept religiosity as information, you have to learn them all. You would have to learn them all in order to have a true spectrum on the truth, because if you only learn one, it's a branch on the tree of truth and not the tree itself. So,
can I give you a little experiment and just maybe y'all just inform me on this? If you put two children same age in a crib and one bottle, just one bottle, both of them want the bottle, will they probably fight or try to hurt each other over that bottle?
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a real clever experiment. This is fundamental. This is basic stuff to give you a clue as to what is percolating it, and you watch that, whatever that thing is, of whether they're uninformed or informed or whatever, what you get a kind of a clue as to how we will conduct ourselves at another time and on another level. So there is something going on. We still struggle with how to define it. That's what all those semantic exercises are about. Those rhetorical exercises are about trying to couch this behavior, whether you want to say it's scientific or whether you want to say it's neurotic or it's psychological, whatever. There is something going on out here in us. And it is so foul that we actually create bombs and weaponry to destroy other people who either don't look like us or agree with us or vote like us, you know, live like us. Something's going on. Can't deny that. We just don't agree on what it is. And so those who are in agreement about what it is, they go over there to the left and they say, okay, well, this is what we believe about it. Those who figure another way about it, they go to the right and they organize and they develop rituals or seances or they burn this or smoke this and drink that, you know, in unison as a part of an expression of what it is they believe. I just happen to believe, you know, I call it God, right? Somebody else may call it something else, but I tell you what we all agree on is that something is eroding this culture, these communities, and this world as we're looking at it. Mm-hmm. For the first time in American history, I call them the Raiders of the Lost Cause. For the first time in American history, you have America, so-called Americans, scaling the wall of the Capitol. I've never seen a more bizarre image in my life. And then, y'all help me with this. Y'all explain this to me, please. How do you come back and say it never happened? What is going on in the human spirit or the human mind or the human intellect that can come back and say, okay, we're going to have a commission. We're going to put together a fact-finding commission to explain what happened. And they said, no, we don't want to do that because it never even happened. It didn't happen. Those are good people. Now, it is pointless, in my view, to have discussions and arguments and debate with that kind of mindset. It's pointless. It's naive.
Yeah, that's worse. Yes, Doc, that's worse than just the variances you get with a point of view. Like if 10 people see an event, you will indeed get 11 different counts, the actual 10 that they saw in the truth of what actually happened. And you're absolutely right. Like we cannot let – here's the thing. As long as we keep up the fight, whether we're doing it scientifically with the inclusion of, you know, antipsychotics into the medical pharmaceutical world, whether we're doing it educationally, trying to inform people as much as possible so that they don't get radicalized over misinformation, whether we're doing it religiously, which is where we build the networks that will help you, deal with the ups and downs of what everyday life. I think it's just everyday life, people dying and being born. We're going to have to tackle this. It's not just a religious fight. This is it's going to have to be tackled on all the fronts, financially, economically, that is, mentally, educationally. So I champion you for being willing not to preach, because you know you could have gotten a nice patronage somewhere, you know, where you didn't have to fight with gang violence, you didn't have to deal with, you know, avid racism. You're a highly intelligent black man, and you could have been accepted pretty much anywhere in the country where they're looking for a reverend doctor, because it's not you're not a kitchen ordained.
Just take up the
fight,
you know,
on
that
reverend end of
the
doctor, right?
Here's my point about that, and thank you, very kind. But here's the reality to me: there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere you cannot hide. I look at Reverend Barber. I feel real sorry for him. I think he's a noble brother. I like him, appreciate and respect him. The symbolism, the imagery of our brother leading a march, almost falling over because the condition of his body is the symbolism that I struggle with in these fights. That all of our efforts, what was that little nursery rhyme they taught us, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall and all that, and all the king's horses, all the scientists, all of the experts, all of the philosophers, none of them, and this is just my view, sis, based on what I'm observing, there is nothing in place. There is no plan. There is no budget. There is no economy. There is no scientific approach that will preserve this nation from unraveling. It's not done yet. Everything we're doing now is patchwork. We're repairing stuff that's so broke. You almost got to put the democracy back together that the last president you had almost broke. And you have to put, systems back together that you had, races, the systemic violations of humanity and civil rights and whatever. You tell us, vote. Okay, one man, one vote. They would do that. He said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to have voting over here. We're going to suspend this and suspend. So and that has been the pattern throughout American history. You're going to go crazy trying to be logical and keep up with a system that is bound to do it the wrong way, to violate, to abuse. These tend to be the trends that are taking the country in a direction of a fallen nation, not a great one, but a falling.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot. Just the fact that we can't be sure that we're going to make it to Walmart without getting shot up. You can't go to
Thank you,
you can't go to the store. You can't go to the amusement park. You can't walk in the car. You can't walk nowhere. You can't have a barbecue in the park. You can't sit in the park in your car. You can't sit in your house.
Ask the brother that was eating ice cream in his apartment.
Brought them jeans.
And she walked in on the Oops apart. The Oops wrong apartment.
Lady. Yeah, the Oops factor. Oops. Come on. And so trying to have a debate with somebody who is trying to defend all of that. There's no defense for it.
Yeah, that's the truth. What's your next project, Doc?
Strategy.
What's coming down pipeline for Doc Bass? What are you going to use? Because we got to bang on this beast. You're right. There is a beast of behavior among us. What's your next project to get maybe to shine the mirror on it or to give us some defense against it? What's your next project?
Well, it's the same project. Ain't nothing happening out here but people. One generation to the next. Nothing is going on but people and the little scientific things we build around us, the little organizations we build around. But we are the show, the people. And so I believe if I have anything to say, it's got to be to the next generation. And the generation, that's why I wrote a book entitled, Posterity Preaching. Not prosperity preaching, but posterity preaching. Where you're talking to the next, you got to give them the game. They don't have the game. And they're going to be so frustrated by people moving the finish line every time they, it's like we used to say when I was doing staff development, I said, it's not about you having a degree anymore. It's where did you get it from?
Yeah.
See how the game goes?
Yeah.
So
you
get a degree, you can even get a PhD from UMKC. But they don't consider it as good a degree as a PhD from Harvard.
They don't even consider it as good as a PhD from MU, and it's the same system.
Thank you. That's my point. So we're playing in the game where they keep moving the goal line and moving the finish line and, you know, moving the criteria. It's time out. Truth is about putting all that to rest and say, well, why? Is this, we end up having to explain why privilege has its way. You know, who gets this and how much do they get and based on what? You'll run yourself raggedy trying to make sense of all of that. We know enough to know enough now. How do we prepare our children to fight in the game? You know what I'm saying? The civil rights movement.
One of the things I tell my son, Doc, is self-care. Like, honestly, if when I talk to young people, I tell them, hey, take care of yourself. Drink the water. Look in the mirror.
Absolutely.
Wash your face. Brush your own teeth. Take, you know, you get this one, as they say, the one temple. You only really get one thing in life that lasts from day one to day, to the last day. And so dedicate your life to this body that you were given to inhabit. You'll never go wrong treating your body right. You know,
that's
the closest
true.
I get to a spiritual or religious message to the young. You
might
know?
I suggest one additional thing? You know, add to it, son, don't be naive. You're a black man in America. You, now everybody else can maybe able to afford, but you cannot afford to be naive, son. Naivete. It's not helpful.
You don't think that's unfair, Doc? That's like telling him you don't get to be a regular human. You're going to have to step it up. Like, you don't get to be.
Life is
you don't
fair.
Get to just be. It's almost like saying you don't get to be. You have to be,
but life
just
isn't fair.
Be but tweaked. You have to be this but tweaked.
But life,
it's not.
But life isn't fair. And if you knowingly. Hold on, Doc. Let me get in, then you can get in. And I know she asked you the question, but I started. But life isn't fair. And if you knowingly know the game is rigged and you allow whomever that you care about to go out there and play or operate like the game is fair, then you are doing them a disservice and you are lying to them. Life isn't fair. The game is rigged. Let them know from the jump the game is rigged. Let them know from the jump that they have to move differently in order to accomplish the same thing that the people around them can accomplish without working even half as hard sometimes. Let them
may I say this?
Give them the game.
One of the more refreshing experiences I've had was to have engaged in social activity with our African brothers and sisters. Those who never came up under slavery. Those who don't have that in their genes or in their psyche, anywhere, approach the world differently. You follow what I'm saying? And so we those of us who have been Americanized, have built this kind of a psyche that thinks in the American box. Yes, we live here. We went to school here. But we are kind of taught to think that America is the center of the universe. It is righteous and holy and all of those kind of things. When it's just another nation. Another nation that has been corrupted by corrupt people. We're afraid to say that. For fear that there's nothing else to believe in. Truth is better than America. I think you got to embrace it. You got to accept that. Truth transcends America. Truth transcends the United States. It's bigger than all of that. Doesn't mean you have to commit suicide or go hang up or anything like that, but just recognize where you are. It's not the center of the universe. We do not have the monopoly on truth, you know, and these systems are not pure. They're not pure. That, I think that's why y'all call it systemic racism, because it's in the blood system, so to speak. Well, you know, now that we know that.
I want him to have his whole life, Doc. I want these children that I teach every day. I want them to get up in the morning and not get up and stand only so tall because they're worried about an invisible ceiling. Go on and stand up. Bump your head if you have to. Make a hole in the ceiling is what you and so many others did. But just stand all the way up instead of this internal
problem that happens 1,000%, sis. I'm for that. But what I'm saying is don't operate with a paradigm of naivete, like they're going to be fair. Yeah, I'm just saying, be all that you can be. Do it 100. Go hard. But you know, don't wink. Don't blink. Don't walk around with your eyes closed.
I can imagine being in your congregation, learning so much. Do you regularly preach, Doc? Do you have a home church?
Pastored for about 20 years, and so I retired in 2007.
Oh. Do you get Do you do any honorary preaching? Do you do any guest you know, revivals and whatnot?
I don't call it all that. I just show up. If I'm invited, I show, on the radio, on the street corner, in the park, wherever it is.
Wherever, Zoom, whatever.
I'm telling you, and I hate to put it this way, but there really is a war going on. And so I don't try to recruit all the brothers. I said, man, hey, you know, you may not have time for that. You just may not, that may not be a luxury you can afford right now, because there is a real and legitimate struggle going on right now. You know, there are people out there in the woods taking target practice and practicing. They're ready for Civil War 2.0. They really are. They're waiting on the dog whistle to be blown by Donald Trump.
They'll tell you they're Christian believers too, though. They saying they're defending like the Christian right and stuff like that. They have a lot of Christian rhetoric in their internationalism.
Well, for the first time, well, I don't want to say for the first time, but during this era, black people have stood up to Christian white folk and said, well, hey, y'all been doing it wrong. You've been lying. I mean, they're challenging the universities and the seminaries. They didn't do that in the 1890s. They just went to the schools. They accepted the little degrees. You know what I mean? Whatever positions they could get, whatever. But this is a whole new day. Whole new day. They said, that is not going to fly. Your evangelical right, that's not going to fly anymore.
The racist
Christianity was not going to fly.
That's right. In the giving pool, that's where the magic happens. Now, listen, I don't want people to be confused. This information that Doc Bass is sharing with us is available to us. All you have to do is read one of his many books. How many is it so far, Doc?
I don't know. Probably about 20, 23, something like that.
About 20, 23. That's a whole lot of research. Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of research. And these are not, you know, introspectives on, this is real. These are, some of these books are text. Slave Ship to Pulpit, I've looked in it. That's a textbook. It's not, you know, a light summer reading. It's something you would use to learn about our historic relationship to Christianity and how it has affected us since the credence from the church to actually come get slaves. You know, since it was agreed by the church that it was okay to have a slave, so he's got so much information from the historic nature of religiosity in this country to how to Pillow Talk is mostly like how Christianity plays in a harmonious relationship. Would you say that, Doc?
No, what I would say is that what gets damaged or what has gotten damaged, and I think I say that in the book, what has gotten damaged are our relationships. You can't have a centuries of slavery and raping of black women who never got 1 minute of therapy, not one microgram or milligram of meditation or anything.
Or
never, none of that. And then not have that affect our relationships. You can't have the emasculation of men. I mean, I know you want to protect your son. I get that. But you cannot have full-scale, systematic emasculation and decimation of a male human being and not have that impact relationships. We've had some hard times. So by the time you get to our generations, we roughen it up. The 90s about took us out. In terms of how brittle and hardcore we became toward each other in relationships. And just as I was describing, where we are today cannot be disconnected from where we were yesterday. So I write about relationship repair.
I'm looking at these books. There's no subject. There's relationships, the children. You've talked about the historic nature. There's no aspect of this you haven't addressed. Gangsta Nation. I mean, there's no aspect. Is there some way that you think, oh my goodness, I didn't talk about it in this way? Is there some new aspect of this thing about being a black man in America, interested in changing the tide, using religion, using God? Is there another venue that you haven't thought of? I'm looking over the walls, and I'm guessing that's from the prison aspect. I can't see no thoughts you haven't left undelved.
I've lived here for 73 years, Rashi. 73 years, you ought to pick up something. I've been in the systems, the school systems, the prison systems, the church systems, you know, marriage systems. You know what I'm saying? And I would be a pitiful brother if I couldn't bring something back for all the hell we go through. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You got to be able to say, hey, y'all, pay attention, you know. We know we're not going to get everybody, but you're going to reach somebody. Look at you.
You are.
I grew up with you. You see what I'm saying?
I wish I could tell you how inspirational this is. It's almost like, you know, when they say don't meet your heroes or don't get to know your hero. But instead of him being an outsider, you know, kind of raining funds down or very specific to a specific crowd, the Christians, just Christian men, he's here for everybody, and it's just so refreshing. Like, you don't find this brother in a boardroom or some cigar room. You find him at the local black-owned restaurant that serves, you know, a southern fare. You know, you find him putting his dollars in black business. You find him, you know, writing about our issues. And so to find a brother, Dr. Ass, thank you for dedicating your brain and energy and power to shedding some light on our African-American condition, you know, to see what it is and propose a solution, even if it is, you know, work through your faith. Work through your faith to find solutions, because that's what you feel is the longest sustaining way for us to work in harmony. And you wouldn't be the first, and you won't be the last. And it's got to be something to it, because it's a repeating message generation after generation, even if it's not Christianity. The idea that we're going to have to do this together, it's the only message, really. We're all going to have to get on this stick together. So I asked you for 30. I was hoping for 45. We going an hour long now, brother, and I just feel so bad because that time come with an honorarium. Lee, you got gonna have to cut the check because that kind of learning, and that, you know, it's so these are the things that workshops are made, symposiums are made of. You know, people pay good money to sit down. That's right. They pay good money to sit down with sages and say, "Here's my problem. Tell me what you have seen work, what you haven't seen work, and give me some solutions." Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Doc. And because we don't have...
Give me a second, Russ. Doc, I want to get in with a question and then my ending, and then I'm going to let Rodney close out. How much money do y'all get away with? I'm just curious.
What was that?
When you went on the robbing spree, how much money did you get away with?
Oh, I can't even remember, because we would, you know, we hit up small joints and stuff like that, jewelry stores, you know, all the way up from what I said, Colorado, New York.
Yes, supermarkets.
Yes,
yeah. Oh, man. Okay, I thought you were going at the military payrolls. That's what I thought you were going at. Okay.
No. We didn't. We figured out how foolish it was for two black dudes with handguns to try to rob a military base. Come on.
I got you. Yeah. Look, hey.
We passed on that one. But that was going to be our first job. Yeah. But, Rashi, let me thank you for the invitation, because I do this. I pay you to do this, because it's just rare that we can get our folk together and just kind of chop it up. That's why I call it the bookery.
Yes.
You know, my old bookstore is called the bookery, where we chop it up and serve it up, you know.
Okay.
And thank you, brother, for your closing questions.
Thank you. No, Rodney gets the closing. So, Rodney, you have anything to add?
I mean, I think you all covered the topic. What I would ask is the possibility of having a second visit to the show, and let's chop it up some more and in that bookery right here on the show. I think that these types of discussions that are sort of free-flowing, especially from a man of the cloth, so to speak, to hear them and maybe even engage. So I appreciate you coming. I suppose, as you mentioned, you were an historian, as Lee did. And as going back to a comment that Lee had broached earlier on people leaving and not entering the church, I go back again to the hypocrisy of the ignorance that is purported in the church and how much that impacts that membership of the church, especially from the young folks who hear that it's one thing, but get into it and see that, well, it's not exactly what they heard that it was. And I was curious from your perspective, what is that impact and how can we move in a different direction from that?
Man, I love this question. I wish you would write that down. I write a book on that. let me begin. I'll put it that way. First of all, I believe God is big enough to speak for God's self, all right? And I'm just, as First Peter, I think, says, you know, given a reason for why I have the hope and faith that I do. That's all. But what I see is this. These little nickels and dimes, and that's lovely. I know they quote the figures in the millions about the offerings we raise. But when you stretch this out over hundreds of years, the scale is so skewed and so far off the damage that has been done, and the mistranslations and misinformation is just is so innumerable. You don't even have a figure, a monetary figure. So the little offerings that we get today in the offering pan, you know, even if the pastor is driving a Rolls Royce, kibbles and bits comparatively, nickels and dimes comparatively, when you consider the scale of usury and loss of income that has occurred for black people over the centuries. And through the manipulation of the gospel, the deliberate disinformation and misinformation, there is no way to count that money. So, on this end of what we see is a trickle, basically a trickle of our youth who don't go to church or leaving the church or whatever. It counts in context. It counts because they're valuable souls in this day. And I have a book. What is the name of that book? Oh, The Preacher's New Clothes. And I deal with that. That book deals with what I call the little bow tie preacher syndrome. You know, all the cutie pie. I call them cutie pie preachers. You know, who try to make a living off of telling people little funny stories and what have you. But remember the Hans Christian Andersen story, the Emperor's New Clothes. Yeah, he really didn't have any clothes on. It took a little boy to tell him. But we have abused, some of us are responsible for abusing the gospel, for making a sideshow out of it and making organ grinders out of our musicians and so on and so on. So it's a sacrifice. Sum it up this way. It's a sacrifice to be true to the true gospel, because you won't then be trying to make usury and mockery of it. And you may not be able to sustain a mega church because the people have been trained to acclimate themselves to that kind of environment where they can show off and be glamorous and all those other kind of things that go along with it. So, it's sad that one of the most powerful institutions that we've ever had that helped us, I think it's unfair to dismiss the fact that the church, the black church, was a galvanizing, very powerful galvanizing instrument and system for keeping us together. I think, Rashid, if you ever finish that book, you'll see my point in that, you're still talking about, you know, decades and decades and decades of coalescing, of developing leaders that would take the people in a particular direction. There's always going to be some kind of criminal element.
Yeah.
We still have that.
Honestly, the black church is the only true communal financial institution black people have, because we don't really put our money together to buy businesses, but we do put our money together in that church. And if you have a church that hears the needs of the people, it does pretty much what the Chinese got going with the, you know, it does something very close to what other nations have been able to pull off. It when the black church works, it's a powerhouse.
Remember, it was primitive. How you figure that? How do you explain people brought here in the bowels of slave ships would be able to organize? You know, you know, they put us out of church. You know that, right? I think they put us out of the Methodist church. How do you explain how these so-called primitive, uneducated, unlearned folk were able to scramble to their feet and put together such a massive organization called the Black Church? With all of its criticisms, with all of its flaws, and what have you, explain that doesn't go away. You can't make that go away.
You cannot do that.
Historical reality.
We wouldn't do it if we... Well, Doc, this is what we'd like to do. Look for us in a month or two. when we may be able to have someone, you know, someone who can help develop this conversation even more, somewhere out of state, maybe even in Maryland or Vegas, you know, somewhere like that. Until then, I'm going to go ahead on and let my co-host do the last 10 minutes. I have no idea how I'm going to repay you for this, Doc Bass, but I will figure it out.
You are, just fix me a sandwich if you see me hungry.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
See, and then you said the least of me. You fed me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you asked the question. You opened the door.
Evening, have a fantastic evening.
Bless you, sir. Bless you, sir. Thank you for everything.
We appreciate the time, sir. And you said your bookstore, the name of your bookstore again is what?
The bookery. I'm just developing. It's one of these kind of Zoom type or online type, what you call digital. Yeah, digital.
Okay.
You know, kind of show like that where, you know, we get together, we talk about your book, whatever your book was, you know, or is, and we chop that up, give you a chance to expose it, put it out there. Yeah.
Is it on Facebook, or how can folks get on?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I just launched it, last Saturday. Last Saturday. So we're still working on the tech, what you call those things, technological end.
Technical side.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Okay. I launched it at the Black Archives, and so now we're going to take it into the airways.
Okay. Well, awesome. Right. Well, sir, thank you so much for your time. We do appreciate it. You have a great day, sir. Enjoy your weekend.
All
peace,
right.
And we look forward to talking to you again.
Enjoy your life.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Wow. Rodney, that was perfect. That was perfect. That's the perfect way to start the day. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he came out with hitting, just called saying it like it is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a whole lot left to say in that. Let's see. Next week, I'm gonna try to put together the rest of the show that we were trying to get at this week. We were discussing the sexless and romanceless relationships. We started on that in the beginning, and we couldn't finish it because we had to bring him in, and I didn't want to get too raunchy before the man of the cloth spoke on the show. So I was like, let's pull back a little bit.
But maybe he feel like he was supposed to be in between that.
That's it, right? I'll be in Dallas next week, so that'll be refreshing. My nephew graduates from high school early as all giddy up in the morning, but I should be able to break free of that and get back and be in space in order to do the show. We can do that live. And then I'm very excited about June the 12th. And if you are a hip-hop head, mark June the 12th down on your calendar. Trust me, the guest that I have for June the 12th, you will thank me. You will not believe it. It's one of my boys, though. So it's that's even better. You know what I'm saying? Like, and, you know, we still haven't had Angela on the show. We got to get her on the show to talk about her damn foot, her actual announcement that she's running for Congress. So I'm sorry, the U.S. Senate, not just Congress, but the U.S. Senate. But in addition to that, though, I went that way because she and I were talking, and she was talking about something. No, she asked me who did I know, and I was like, I don't know. And then I started calling out names, and she was like, how the hell do you know all these people? I was like, people I know. You would be amazed at who's in your Rolodex, family. Seriously. Dust it off every now and again. Pick up the phone and call people. You know what I'm saying? Rodney, you have anything to add before we get out of here?
Lee, I think that for folks who wonder what this show is about, you got a taste of the eclectic of subjects and types of people that are here.
and that visit the show and that we engage with, who in turn gives you an opportunity to engage with them, please feel free to engage with them. We don't always do it and sometimes don't do it enough, but there is a call-in number for the show, and we would like to hear what you all have to say. There's a Facebook page for the show. Even when after the show you're listening to us and you have some comments, questions, please feel free to ask those questions and submit those comments. We look forward to engaging you. We don't want this to be just a one-way from us to you. We want feedback from you that will help make the show more engaging. And if you all have folks that you think we should have as guests, you know, let us know and let's see how we can work to get those people on board. This week we had some notable events. Brother Malcolm, I'm not sure if you all spoke about that earlier. Our prince, you know, Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther the King Jr., right? But we also had our prince, Malcolm, who just had that recognition this week. Also, we had something that I don't want us to forget that happened in these last 10 days, and that's the anniversary of the bombing of MOVE in Philadelphia. Mm. Yeah, they didn't just bomb us in Oklahoma and Tulsa, Black Wall Street. It wasn't 100 years like Tulsa. You know, this was in my upbringing in life that they bombed MOVE. Also, this was the anniversary of the lynching of Mary Turner was this week. You know, we talk about Sandra Bland. You know, we talk about others. But let us not forget those others who came before them, the heinous acts that were involved. Remember, Mary Turner was hung upside down and had a baby cut out. And then one of those people involved, as it let out its first cries of life. So let's remember those things. And please don't forget and let it be a part of, it is a part of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, family, that's all for this week. I tell you, you just never know who's going to pop up next to us on a Saturday morning. Hopefully you were here, be it live or later. If you weren't, sorry for you. If you were, tell a friend to tell a friend. Until next week, we'll see you on the radio.